Flip, 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 flip. Flip Weekly!
Hey, what's going on? This is Matt from flipweekly.com. You're listening to the Flip Weekly podcast. We're all about making money here. We're going to thrift stores, garage sales. We're scouring Facebook Marketplace to find items that we can resell online for a profit. Some people's side hustle. It's my side hustle. I enjoy going there and finding rare and unique items. I'm mostly looking for items that you can sell for at least $100. I'm not picking up items like jeans. I always use jeans as a poor example of what I will never be buying, but I'm looking for, you know, the things you don't see every single day, or I'm looking for items that you can get for like $2 and sell for $100. In this issue, I'm going to be talking about my exact Facebook Marketplace strategy that I use to make a lot of money on weekends. This isn't something where you have to get up early on a Saturday morning like garage sales. This isn't about going to thrift stores throughout the week before everyone else to, you know, find items. This is something you can honestly do sitting at home on a weekend with your kid in the other room, you know, in your pajamas, just scouring Facebook Marketplace looking for a great deal. And I'm going to talk to you about that. But really, I have to talk about what's on my mind with a bit of recency bias, because I feel like an absolute fucking idiot. I talk a lot about the Wiggles on this podcast and in the newsletter. I found a Wiggles DVD, right? It was the Wiggles TV Series 1. Now, if you've been following for a while, you know these TV series DVDs can sell for a lot of money. You're looking for either number one, number two, or number three. There's only three in the series. There's around three discs per case. They sell for a lot and they sell quickly. You know, you can sell TV series one. There's like a comp, $139. The TV series two, there's a comp, highest comp, $285. And TV series three, the third one in the series, there's a comp for $400. These are all sold listings, by the way. I'm not going to give you active listings. These are all sold listings. So if you found all three, you'd be able to get maybe $1,000 if you listed them up all together. But I found TV Series 1 in a Lifeline thrift store. The children's DVDs were $2 and less marked. So when I was pulling this out, I was like looking all over it, waiting to see like a price tag on it that was going to be like $25. But no, there was nothing there. I opened the case up and I checked the back of them. I made sure that they looked okay. In the Lifeline lighting, I thought everything was fine. So I took this home after paying $2, thinking I have $150. Home run, it would sell in the next day or two. And then I brought out the DVD player. You blow the dust off the DVD player, it's not getting used. Come on, it's not getting used in my household. It's in the corner of the room, or it's being sold. You know, I don't actively keep a DVD player in my house anymore, because most DVDs that you buy, they haven't been handled by little fucking like kids that do not give a fuck about about physical media. They usually work, but when you get kids' DVDs, you need to be checking if they're going to play. I tested disc one, worked fine. Disc two worked fine. And I get to disc three. Just like the last leg of a multi, I'm looking at this disc and I'm thinking, this ain't gonna work. There's a little scratch on the back of it that just isn't giving me very much hope. So I put the disc in, and it buffers, it jumps, it's like, it's struggling to play. It gets to the menu, but not without stopping and starting. And I'm just thinking, great, this doesn't work. I won't be getting my $150. I could sell it with, you know, a disc missing if I yeet this off the fucking balcony, or I could just sell it as, oh, you know, this disc doesn't work, but you might be able to get it fixed. give the buyer a bit of hope. But then I thought, is there anything at home that I can use to fix this DVD? Like, for anything else in the home, there's usually somebody online that's tried the most bizarre solutions to a problem and they've worked. So I jump onto Google, I jump onto YouTube, and I type in, you know, how to fix a scratched disc. And what comes up on Google and on YouTube, I'm seeing the same trend. I'm seeing people talk about using toothpaste Now, I'm being serious. People are talking about putting a bit of toothpaste on a disc, on the back of the disc, you know, the shiny side of the disc, rubbing it around and then sort of buffering it a bit, wiping it off, putting it back in, and it plays. So I'm thinking, I have nothing to lose except for a bit of toothpaste. Let's try it out. So I go into the bathroom, I get the Colgate, I bring it out, I lather up the fucking disc. This entire time I'm thinking, I feel like such a fucking idiot. I rub it all around, and then I clean it off just like it shows in this very amateur-ish YouTube video. Definitely not filmed by a professional. And I put it back in. And this time, you might be thinking that, Eureka? No. This time it doesn't even load. It doesn't even get to the main menu. There's no buffering. It just doesn't start. I'm thinking, what... What have I done? Is this one of those joke videos that go around and it's all about tricking people into doing the most obscure things? You know, I remember back in the day, people on the internet would joke about, you know, in order to get rid of viruses on your computer, to delete System 32, which is a very, very important folder on your computer, which you should not be deleting. But it's one of those things. I'm starting to think I've just been trolled. I'm like, a very tech-savvy person that has just been fooled by the internet. And, you know, you can trust everything that you read on the internet. So I'm very disappointed that this hasn't worked for me. But at the same time, I'm thinking, this scratch was so deep, I don't understand how you would buff it out with toothpaste. The only way to get this fixed would be a disc resurfacer. And from my understanding, what a disc resurfacer does is it sort of like sands it down a bit, right? Like it buffers it right down so the scratch isn't surface. It's like it's just been like filed down. I don't know if that's true or if that's an accurate way to describe disc resurfacing, but that's what I think the process involves. And there's a few different services within Sydney that you can get a disc resurfaced. The prices vary, except you have to send in your disc. There's no real physical retail store I can go into to get this done. You know, if I could go into a retail store and pay $5-$10 to get this fixed, I 100% would, because it just increases my cost of goods from $2 to $12. So yeah, I would do that, but there's just nothing around. I don't want to send in a disc. You know, once you add in the service fee, the shipping back and forth, I just can't be bothered. So I've listed it up for $50 even. It'll be 2 into 50, so it's still a decent return. I'm just disappointed that this at-home remedy didn't work. I was putting all my eggs in that one basket. I should have known this wasn't going to work. A toothpaste cannot get rid of a scratch. Like, just thinking about it in hindsight, it's just like, what are you doing? Like, your disc now smells fucking minty fresh. Nothing has changed except you've given it a bit of a clean. It doesn't fix a deep scratch. Like, very stupid on my behalf. And then I'm also thinking, what has a kid done to this to get the scratch so deep? Like, are they attacking this legitimately with a knife? Kids don't have, like, fucking nails that can dig into a disc like this. And if they do... why are they doing that? Why are they just scratching the back of a disc for no good reason? I guess kids don't really have explanations for things, but yeah. The moral of that story, though, is do not put toothpaste on your discs. Which sounds so fucking ridiculous to say out loud. You're just listening to this being like, yeah, no shit. Oh, it's so dumb. That's so dumb. Do not put toothpaste on your discs. Yeah. So that didn't work. But you need to be looking out for these TV series of the Wiggles. There's only three. When you find one Wiggle, you can find more than one. In this case, I didn't. But yeah, this TV series 1, 2, and 3, you're in for massive paydays. And these are most likely going to be priced like any other DVD. So if you're thrift store is charging $1 per disc, and there's only 3 discs. Like, your cost of goods is $3. If you find the most expensive one, that's a $400 return. So it's always going to be worth picking up. And yeah, you need to be keeping an eye out for the Wiggles TV series 1, 2, and 3 on DVD. Now, speaking of DVDs, I was able to find a box set that sells for insane money. But the most insane thing about this television show are the unhinged ratings and reviews when you search for it. I'm going to tell you a bit about it. So, in a Vinnie's for $15, I found a box set of Captain Planet. Now, Captain Planet was one of my favorite shows growing up as a child. The show ran in the 90s for about 6 seasons. It was all about a group of teens trying to save the world or promote looking after the environment. They would get these magical rings and they would summon Captain Planet and they would just battle evil people, and the evil people are trying to, you know, damage the world, right? It's an 18 disc box set. $15 is what I paid. Unusual pricing. Like I said a couple of minutes ago, DVDs are usually priced per disc, and for this to be $15 when it's 18 disc box set, I don't know how they're coming up with that price. But if you find the complete collection of Captain Planet in like, not in the box set, but in like the smaller jewel case, you'll be able to get about $70 for it. But if you find it in this box set like I have, this is the Australian release, there are sold comps in the $250 range. So I'll be able to turn this $15 box set into $250. Now, I've been able to perfect the way I find value in thrift stores, especially when it comes to older 90s kids shows. I created, I think it must have been 2 podcasts ago, a interactive table of over 100 nostalgic 90s kids shows, all ranked by their eBay value. Number one is worth thousands of dollars. There's a lot of data there for you to go through. So if you memorize some of the more valuable DVDs there, you'll be able to scan the rack, filter out obviously what is not worth picking up, and look for these sort of classics where you know you're going to make a lot of money. You can find that table on flipweekly.com. When I was looking into Captain Planet, you know, when you find something like this and it hasn't been on your mind for years and years and years, you just go down a rabbit hole. And that's what I did with Captain Planet. I just chucked it into Google and looked around to see what people were talking about. What struck me, besides all the people remembering their childhood, remembering how captivating and engaging the series was all of these insane people leaving negative reviews on the show in 2025. You know, this isn't reviews left in the 90s. These are people that have come to, like, the IMDb page of Captain Planet and have wasted their time writing out insane, insane reviews of this show. So, to recap, the show centers around those groups of teens. They use magical powers. The powers are granted by the rings that each of the little kids have. And the rings summon Captain Planet, and all together they fight the evil villains who want to destroy planet Earth. It's promoting environmental awareness. It's promoting, like, environmental responsibility. It's basically kids telling the audience not to dump shit in the lake. So it's a crazy concept, right? I'm just going to read out some of these reviews. Just they're fucking insane, and to me they're hilarious. So this is a I'm having a lot of trouble saying IMDb. This is a review from somebody on that website. This is it. I quote, "I hate this show. It makes me want to dump toxic waste in a park. I would love to punch all those kids in the face. Chopping down trees isn't evil. It's practical. I am so happy this dumb show is over. This show never taught me a thing. It just made me angry." So this is a review left by NonaBear10. This person has come back to the IMDb page years and years and years after this show ended. I mean, it ended in the 90s, right? And is just so angry that this show was promoting environmental awareness. Chopping down trees isn't evil, it's practical. Oh, God. Man. Okay, so that was one of them. The next one is, and I have to tell you, this is legit. This is a real review. And I quote, "This show is a bunch of hippie BS, if you ask me. It's also funny." Oh my God, this is insane, this review. I have to start again. It is just insane. "This show is a bunch of hippie BS, if you ask me. It's also funny how the group of people are all diverse and from every corner of the world, and they get along so well. Real cute. I give this show a 1 out of 10. This person is insane. This person is saying, you can't have a diverse friend group. Like, what the fuck are they on about? It's a kid's show. This is in the 90s. It's insane. This person's like, all my friends are white. As soon as a diverse person is included in our group, we just do not get along. I'm very worried about that user. Now, this is the third and final review. It's from somebody with the username Plankton Rules. Now, I was going to summarize this. I was going to like clip it down, but the entire thing is honestly worth reading out. So it is this, and I quote, "Yuck. This was an awful cartoon designed to brainwash our kids into loving the planet, but I think it often made kids gag instead. This preachy nonsense was about as watchable as the TV test pattern. Each episode was jam-packed with political correctness and an almost maniacal worship of Mother Earth." Mother Earth is in quotes, by the way. "And so it looked less like a kid's cartoon and more like propaganda. And that's exactly what it was. My oldest daughter watched this a few times with me, and I was offended at both the horrible quality of the animation and writing, as well as the anti-big business bias of the show. Generally, big business people were shown as being corrupt and bent on destroying our planet." This person is so close to getting it. So close. "But thanks to the racial and gender diverse team of kids in Captain Planet, these evil no good nicks were taught a lesson again and again and again and again. Heck, if you've seen one episode, then you've practically seen them all. This is perhaps the only TV show I ever saw that made me want to go kill a spotted owl or burn down a rainforest. It's that bad. Holy shit. Plankton Rules. What are you on about? What are you on about? Generally, big business people were shown as being corrupt. And bent on destroying our planet. Hey, I wonder fucking why, Plankton Rules. What the fuck? And then they go on, but thanks to the racial and gender diverse team of kids in Captain Planet." Gender diverse team. It's a bunch of kids, boys and girls. What is wrong with these people? And then they say, "If you've seen one episode, then you've seen them all." Yeah, mate, that's kids' television shows. Have you ever watched an episode of The Wiggles? It's song after song after song. Oh, look, another Wiggles episode. I wonder what's going to happen. Oh, it's another fucking song. Ask any parent in the world about The Wiggles, and they'll all tell you, oh, it's the exact same shit. Dude, I just can't. A television show aimed at kids should not make you this angry. It should not make you want to go and kill a spotted owl or burn down a rainforest. I just don't get it, man. This person has so much hate in their veins, and they are also just, they're so far away yet so close to getting how things work in the world. It's just, there's not a hint of irony when they say, "Generally, big business people were shown as being corrupt and bent on destroying our planet." Like, you're so close. You're so close to getting it, man. The reviews, honestly, they're so disappointing. But that's the thing. It's not going to affect the final sale price of this item. The ideal customer for this box set isn't going to be Plankton Rules. It's going to be somebody that enjoyed the show as a kid and is wanting to rewatch it, or just introduce it to their kid or someone they know. It's not propaganda designed to brainwash children. Like, it's, oh man. Anyway, If you find Captain Planet out in the wild, pick it up. You're aiming for the box set that sells for $250. If you can find the smaller complete collection, you can still get $70 for it. Maybe even $100 if you add on our Australia tax. But yeah, crazy world we live in, right? Now we go to thrift stores. We go to garage sales. We also scour Facebook Marketplace. Now I'm about to tell you my exact Facebook Marketplace strategy. Now I've been able to use this to find free items, to find cheap items, making a ton of money in the process. So this is exactly what I do. If you follow this, you might be able to find some good deals. You might even be able to snipe me on some of these. We're aiming to get like 10 times return. We're wanting to make a lot of money. So this is no longer a secret. It isn't like expensive paid software. It's literally something you can do at home on a Saturday or a Sunday. It works for me every single time. Now, you saw last week that I picked up a huge Polly Pocket 90s bundle that cost me $200. Conservatively, that was worth about $1,500 after listing. That was found on Facebook Marketplace, and I'm going to tell you my process, but first I want to take you back to just the other day, another listing. This is a listing that I see. It's titled Free, in all caps, Digital Cameras and DVD Video Camera. There's four photos in total. The listing description states what all of the cameras are. There's four in total. And at the bottom of it, it says, take one or all. Pick up ASAP from, they say where they're from, no holds. Now, this is a dream listing. This is what we want to be finding on Facebook Marketplace. We have not one, not two, not three. We have four digital cameras. Now, digital cameras, they're low-hanging fruit for resellers, right? Garage sales, thrift stores, digital cameras, they go fast. They're one of the first things that go. A lot of people sell them for like $5-$10, and in most cases, you can get at least $100 for them. Now, I love that these are listed for free, but I also love that the person has taken their time to like individually describe each camera. They have model numbers. They also have a photo for each camera. In most cases, when there's a freebie, it's someone taking a single photo and it's like looking inside a bag or a box and you can barely see anything inside of it. All you see is like dirt and mud and just you're thinking, if I put this in my car, it's going to be filled with fucking spiders. So I see that the cameras, they're all great brands. We have a Panasonic DVD video camera. It said that it comes with the case, instructions, all of the cables, batteries, blank DVDs. There's a Nikon Coolpix digital camera, which comes with a case, charger, battery, and instructions, including the box. There's an Olympus digital camera, which comes with a battery and the charger. And there's a Fuji waterproof digital camera. And it says in the description that it comes with a battery and charger, but it needs a new battery. Now, when I see that, I do not care that it needs a new battery. You can buy new batteries online for like $10, and that's what I'm going to do. But yeah, I see the cameras, I see the good brands, I see the pickup location, it's sort of close by, and for whatever reason, this person needs them gone ASAP. I don't know why, it's like a single bag of digital cameras, and this person's like, I need these out of my fucking house tonight. So I shoot off my messages with only like a minute or two of the entire thing being live. I say, hello, is this still available? Yes, I know. As the very first message that you send on Marketplace or what you can send, I immediately click that. I want that in there. I want the chat opened up. And then I follow that through with, I would love to pick this up and I'm happy to come out right now. Now that person has replied, hi, yes, sure. And I respond instantly. I say, awesome, thanks. I say their name just so it looks like I'm not like a bot. And I ask for the address and they say, what time? And I state, I can leave in a few minutes. I'll be coming from, and I put in my location. Now that person has said yes, they've given me the address. I've driven out there. I've secured the listing. Now in terms of the camera values, the Nikon Coolpix is the most valuable camera. It comps at approximately $300. Now the Olympus camera comps at around $70, but that's only because it will have to be sold as parts as the It's like the LCD screen is a bit flickery. The next one is the waterproof camera, the one that needs a battery. That's comped at $150, so I'll just get the battery for $10. I'll either buy it off eBay or another online store. I've done it before with my Polaroid camera. You can just get the batteries online. They're really cheap, $10. So that's comped at $150. And the Panasonic DVD video camera was comped at $150 too. So there's about $600 worth of digital cameras here. And that honestly is an absolutely insane deal for Facebook Marketplace, especially when the person wants them gone as soon as possible. So when I was out there with the lady, I asked if she received many messages. And again, she has said to me, inundated with messages, that I beat them out. Great, that's good for me. I was honestly like questioning, why don't you just list them on eBay? Because I did. I listed them on eBay, and guess what? The Nikon Coolpix, I listed it at 7:04 p.m., which is when I got back, and I sold it at 7:32 p.m., and that sold for $175. Now, I did have it up for more. Somebody sent in a best offer, and to be honest, when somebody sends you a message for something that you got for free, and it's like 30 minutes later, and they're like, you know, hey, can I pay you $175 for this? I'm like, yes, sure you can. Like, I'd be happy if you did. That Facebook Marketplace deal, $0. That Nikon Coolpix, $175. I would have more sales to report to you, but two out of the three have gone to friends and family. And the remaining one, which is the waterproof one, that's the one that needs new battery. So I'll get the battery. It will go on to sell for $150. Digital cameras sell insanely quick, especially if you've got a good brand. So we'll be turning $0 free into whatever $175 plus $150 is. So like $300. Would have been more if I didn't tell people that I got free digital cameras, because that's like telling people you just won the lotto, right? All of a sudden, everyone wants or needs some money. But anyway, here's all that I do. Now, this isn't a fucking hack, right? Like Facebook Marketplace, Facebook is a billion, probably going to be a $1 trillion company at some point in time. You're not hacking into Facebook Marketplace, right? There's no hacking being done. There's no scraping, there's no software, because if you take that sort of approach, you're going to end up getting banned, like, unless you're rotating around IP addresses, but we won't get into that. But look, this is all that I do. The first step, before you even look on Facebook Marketplace, you need to set up text replacement on your phone. That's where you type in one or two characters, one, two, three, four characters, and it is replaced with a sentence. I do that all the time. I have multiple saved in my phone. When somebody messages me on Facebook Marketplace about an item that I've listed, I just type in YIIA, and that replaces it with, hey, yes, this is available. Pickup is from, and I tell them where it's from, or I can post it. Now, I do YIIA because that just, you know, it just stands for yes, it is available. Another one is CIPU, which is, hey, can I pick up today? I'd be coming from my city, and I can leave now paying cash. It's an example of personalization in your messages, but at the same time, it's not really personalized because it's mass appeal, right? So you can send it quickly, you can send it to anyone, and it also helps when people are responding to your listings too, because if someone asks you if an item is available, just type in YIIA, and it's all pre-filled, waiting, you know, for the buyer to ignore it, like what 90% of them do. So you have that. Now, if you don't know how to set up that keyboard replacement on your phone, honestly, just Google it. Google whatever your phone is plus keyboard replacement. And if you can't figure that out, like, I'm really sorry to say, but you probably won't be striking the deals, because you need to be fast. You need to be on the ball, making it out like it's a fucking solving cancer. But no, we're just, all it is, step one, making sure that you're ready to go if you see a listing. So step two is, when a deal appears, here's what I do. I immediately click on Marketplace's, hi, is this available? I'm just opening the door so I can then shoot in my personalization. A lot of people say they ignore it, hi, is this available? But you're filling in, you're messaging afterwards with, you know, what we've just talked about. So I do that. If it's a really good deal, I'll shoot through another text with like more personalization. I can chuck in like, oh, I can see that the pickup location is whatever their suburb is. Google Maps says I can be there in 10 minutes. Is that okay? Now, I ask a question because I want a response. So that's all you really need to do before you find those deals. But the question is like, how do you find the deals? And it honestly is not rocket science. It's not a hack, like I was saying. This is the only good way to get Facebook Marketplace deals, right? So first of all, you need to set a radius. I do 20 kilometers. It's the furthest I would realistically travel on a weekday or a weekend for, you know, like a unique or interesting item. I don't want to inquire about an item that's too far away, because you want the majority of your interactions to resolve in a sale and a rating. Now, I don't have any proof of this, but I think it would help the algorithm. If Facebook measures, you know, like a click-through rate for you and then a conversion rate, and it sees that like for every listing that you interact with results in a sale, I think you're going to be fed more of what you're after. So that rolls into the second point, which is you need to train the algorithm. Now, for example, if you're a video game seller, you just need to click on video game listings. This is at first, okay? So you're training it. You need to click on your video game listings. It doesn't matter if you're really interested or not. You just want to show the algorithm that it's your type of thing. So if you only want like free items, only click on free items. The next thing is don't bother saving a listing. Because really, if it's a good deal and you're saving a listing, it's going to be gone before you can come back to it. Like, it was only last week or the week before I found a Nintendo GameCube bundle that I missed out on, and I messaged at the 2-minute mark. Somebody had got in at the 1-minute mark and beat me. So if you're saving that, going back and looking up, you know, the video game prices, you're not going to get it. You're not going to get it. It's that simple. And I think, you know, Facebook Marketplace, they might, you know, internally mark you with their algorithm as like a window shopper. And window shoppers, they're not going to be shown deals within like the first 30 seconds because you're not going to buy it, right? Now, if you're not seeing your type of items in the marketplace feed, which I don't think will happen, because you will see in a marketplace, if you just click on one thing, like if I accidentally click on like a pair of men's shorts, all of a sudden my entire feed is filled with men's shorts. So I don't think it's going to happen, but you can use the search bar, but I wouldn't click on those individual listings, because you're wanting to really show Facebook Marketplace that you're looking for the items, but they're not being delivered to you. So it might spark, you know, listings being pushed towards you. Again, there's no proof of this. The Facebook Marketplace algorithm isn't public. It's not open source. This is all just speculation, and it's just like logical thinking, right? Like if you have a logic tree, it just makes sense from like a programming perspective. From here, you've trained the Facebook Marketplace algorithm, the Facebook Marketplace feed. It's familiar now with what you're after. It's going to serve you relevant results. You can open up Marketplace during the week. I've had some luck, mostly after work times, you know, at 5, 6, 7 o'clock, but you're going to have the most success on the weekends. Now, Saturday and Sunday, they are gold rushes for Marketplace. Like, these are the days when you need to have your cash ready. You're going to be needing to leave your place almost straight away. I mean, once you've secured the listing and you've said like, I can be out, you do have a bit of buffer time. You know, if you do have a kid, you can take a bit longer to, you know, put the kid in the car. And I know that can take a while. You do have a bit of buffer time once you've secured it, but you just need to at least be willing to say that you'll be leaving right away. Yeah, that's what sellers want on those Saturdays and Sundays. People are cleaning out their garages. They're cleaning out their houses. They have a single bag of digital cameras that cannot possibly stay in the house for any fucking longer. They want them gone. And that is when you're there to say, hey, I'll come and get them out of your hair right now. I'll be there soon. Let's just do it, right? Then this is what I do. There's no science. There's nothing here that you cannot do. And it's so incredibly simple. Open up Facebook Marketplace, pull down on the app to refresh it, and I just repeat it like every 60 seconds or so. And if I'm not having any luck, I close it for like 5 minutes and then I repeat it again. That's it. That is honestly it. Now, you might be a bit disappointed that that's it, but that is all that you need to do with Facebook Marketplace. you train the algorithm, you make sure you're ready to go, and then it's just a matter of waiting for those listings to show up at the very top. Now, you'll honestly be surprised by the amount of stuff that's put up for free or very, very cheap on Facebook Marketplace every single weekend. It is new stuff like every 30 seconds. So on a weekend, you're going to have to choose exactly when to pull the trigger. You might see a deal and you're like, oh, I could make 50 bucks there. But then you're like, oh, I don't want to just make 50 bucks. Let's go for a bit more. You know, you might pass on something. That's what I do. I do it most weekends if I'm just, you know, sitting on the couch and I've had a big day or whatever. And I'm like, I want to create more fucking work for myself. I open up Marketplace and I do everything I've just told you to do. The most important thing, though, is you need to follow through on those, for on any deals you create, because you need to be committed to the process. You don't want to end up having that you can now rate your buyer, you can now rate your seller and not turn up, because you do not want any of those negative reviews on Marketplace. Who knows if they affect listings shown to you, but it can't have a positive effect. That's all we need to know. So that all sounds like common sense, and it really is. There is no hacking to a billion-dollar company like Facebook, like I've said. All we can do is we can test out different scenarios and see what works. And for me, that's really the only solution that's worked. You know, train your algorithm. It knows what you're after. You need to message fast. You need to sound like a human, and you need to be available right away. At the end of that, you get your rating and you continue getting like those fresh listings. A couple of other tips that have helped me is, number one, if you are going to do video games, like if you heard me talk about, you know, getting a huge Facebook Marketplace video game bundle, turning 100 into 500, you need to get locked in, because you need to be within a minute or two. If it's been up for an hour, it's most likely been looked over. It's been determined that it's not worth it to resellers. And you just need to know that video games is the hardest category, just in terms of beating out everyone else, because it's such a popular category. There's so much value. It's the low-hanging fruit, right? It's the low-hanging fruit, just like digital cameras. You need to find your own niche, obviously, or you can compete in video games. You know, there's only so many resellers within a certain area on Facebook Marketplace on a weekend. You know, there is enough to go around. That's why I'm happy to talk about these tips. I could be creating a competitor if you live just up the road from me. But no, the fucking world is big enough that we can all get a fucking good deal on Facebook Marketplace. Now, number two is, I found that most of the good deals, they come from people that only have a few reviews. Like, I don't want to be buying from somebody that has maybe like 150 reviews. You know, this person is selling all the time. It could indicate they're a reseller, and we're not going to be getting the best deals there. We want the people that want to get rid of their items because they can't have it in their house for another fucking second, for whatever reason. Another thing that I look at when it comes to items listed is whole numbers. Whole numbers, they're a good indication that the item hasn't been priced to eBay. Like, we don't want to be finding a bundle of games that's been priced at like $185. It's just a weird amount, right? Like, if you've got a bag of video games, you're going to be like, oh, you know, 50 bucks or 100 bucks or 20 bucks. $185, a bit too specific for me. I'm thinking the person has looked up the individual prices of the games. My reseller alarms are going off. You know, they'll sell them to somebody that wants to play them, which is all fine, you know, go ahead, do that. But it's not a way for you and me to be making money, I don't think, unless the person is just being like, well, $185 is my spirit number, you know, bullshit like that. Maybe you can get lucky, but I'm looking for those whole numbers, right? Now, the other thing is, you need to know your base values. So you cannot, especially with video games, I keep going back to video games, but it's just the easiest one to talk about. You cannot waste time looking up comps on video games. You need to know the basics. You need to know, you know, if there's a PlayStation bundle, a PlayStation 2 bundle with the console, two controllers, five video games, say it's priced at 100 bucks. You need to know that the PlayStation console by itself, you could sell for about 100 bucks. So then you're looking at the controllers and the games. You might be able to make some profit just on those, especially if they're a good game. If it's priced at like 25 bucks, you know you can sell just the console for 100 bucks. So you're in the profit 100%. you need to know those base values. Now, I have a way to memorize video game prices. Go to flipweekly.com, look at the resources. It's a game that I created. It's basically just flashcards. It shows you a video game. You choose which one you think's the most expensive. You go on the leaderboard if you get a high score. Really basic stuff. But that's how I've been able to quickly determine if a bundle is worth me buying. I see the console, I see the games, I see, oh look, it's all FIFA, they're not worth anything. But if I see, you know, something that's a bit different, a bit out there, I know I can make money on that game. So you need to know your base prices. I mean, digital cameras, the exact same. Research some of those popular point and shoot cameras, work out which ones are the ones to target, and, you know, make, yeah, just do that. You know, the Nikon Coolpix that I was just talking about, great camera, $200-$300 for that. The Sony CyberShot, that's another one that's very popular with resellers. These are all base prices that you need to know in order to be quick, because you do not want to be one of those people that says, hey, is this available? And then you look up the prices and you realize, oh, you fucked up because you don't know what this is worth. And then you, you know, ignore them like every other fucking marketplace buyer. Don't be those people. You also, who knows how that affects the algorithm? You initiating a conversation and it doesn't lead to a sale or a rating. I know if I was programming a marketplace and that happened, I would be like, well, you're not a good buyer. I'm not going to feed you good stuff. I'm just going to, you know, rank you lower from a programming perspective. Yeah, look, none of this is really foolproof. It served me well. I've been able to make a lot of money doing this. In the next couple of issues, I'm going to talk about more Facebook Marketplace deals that I've got that are insane. Honestly insane, like $100 into over 1,000, just really cool items. So yeah, I mean, let me know if you have any other marketplace tips, but if you follow this and you give it a good amount of time on a weekend, just doing what I've told you, you're gonna secure something cool. I guarantee it. As long as you follow that, you're gonna find something. Now we're going to move on to what I sold, followed by secondhand opinions. And this first sale, we have one that ticks off the $100 mark, and it's a category that I don't know much about. I went thrifting with my mum in April of this year, so not that long ago, and I wouldn't have picked this up if I wasn't with her, because it's a candle. Now, I don't really know the difference, well, I didn't at the time, between a used candle and a new candle. The obvious answer is, of course, a burnt wick. Duh, right? And this thing, man, it was a collaboration between Dusk, which is an Australian candle store, and a company called Streets. Now, Streets makes ice cream. Yeah, it's a weird combination. They make a specific brand of ice cream called the Paddle Pop. A Paddle Pop is like an ice cream on a stick. Very simple. This one was the classic chocolate. So this candle, this 2-wick candle, decent weight in this thing, by the way, it smelt like a chocolate Paddle Pop. I bought it for $10, and I'm going to be honest with you, this thing smelled fucking terrible, right? You would think that like a chocolate Paddle Pop would smell all right, but I'll be completely honest, man, like I forgot to mark the skew on like my storage containers of where I put this thing, but that didn't matter because the fucking pure whiff of this thing, it got into like every corner of my house, and I wanted it gone. I could identify this candle just by smell, right? I could just lead myself to the storage container where this is, and it's gone on to sell, and it sold for $100. So 10 into $100, looking at the market, it seems like it's untapped, right? Like, or at least for me, I've never really dove into it before. I think this is the first time that I've ever sold a candle. Looking at the comps, man, like this collaboration between Dusk and Streets, like the Paddle Pops and their Ice Blocks ice creams, their comps are insane. They're like, I mean, the candles are selling for $100. I guess they're whatever the candle version of out of print is. They no longer make them. They have like a fragrant oil. I don't really know what a fragrant oil is. I don't think it's perfume. I think it's like oil that you burn. I don't know if, yeah, I honestly have no idea. I remember my mum used to have these oil diffuser things when we were younger. I couldn't stand the fucking smell of them. You'd like put oil into like this little contraption, and you'd put a candle underneath it. The candle would burn the oil on top, and it would put out like a foul smell. I don't know if it's that, because I don't know if a fragrant oil that has the aroma of like a fucking rainbow paddle pop would smell any good, like being burnt. But yeah, it's a fragrant oil, and those fragrant oils, they sell for about $100, $80 plus at the time, like $10.95 postage. So that's basically $100, right? So yeah, these ice cream collaborations with Dusk are just going off. And I think that comes back to products where they have, you know, collaborations with other companies, limited edition type things. They usually do quite well. And it makes sense, because when I'm looking at, you know, for example, sports jerseys, which is something I make a lot of money in, I'm not looking for just like the Dusk candle by itself. I'm not looking for just a regular jersey. I want a special jersey. I want like the Indigenous round jersey that has, you know, the Aboriginal artwork on it. Or I'm looking for the Anzac round jersey, which has like soldier prints, I don't know, that sort of shit on the jersey. So this is sort of like that. This is like, no, it's not a regular Dusk candle. It's a collaboration with an ice cream company. That collaboration makes a lot of sense. That's why it's worth a lot of money. The thing that I don't really understand is how this is still getting searches on eBay. Like, was this such a huge campaign that people actively still talk about it? Like, oh, remember when they made paddle pop flavored candles? Like, is there a community of candle makers or candle enthusiasts within Australia that are like, this was such a good thing, I wish that I bought one at the time? Or is it just people scrolling through eBay and they find a unusual looking candle and they want to buy it? I really don't understand it. I guess with any sort of hobby, is enjoying candles a hobby? I don't know. I think enjoying candles as a hobby would be something that I would put down if I didn't have any other hobbies and I was just, you know, scraping the bottom of the barrel. Like, oh yeah, I enjoy, you know, eating dinner the few days a week I make it. It's not a hobby. But yeah, this is something that is worth thinking about when you find, I don't know, candles. If it's a bit of a novelty, if it's in a collaboration with another huge brand, then, you know, pull the trigger on it. Because I'm glad that I did. And I was glad that I was there with Mum, because I wouldn't have bought it if I was just by myself. I would have taken a smell of it. And I would have been like, there is no fucking way this is coming back to my place and stinking up my apartment. But yeah, the next item is something I decided to pick up on my own. And the sales keep rolling for the Polly Pockets. This is a Polly Pocket by the name of Stroll and Surprise. This isn't a compact. This isn't a building. This is literally like six individual little pieces, like 1 centimeter Polly Pocket pieces that have sold for $80. Insane, right? Like, it's a mum that's holding a pram, a double pram. It has two little kids in it. And it also has an older child riding a skateboard. That is the complete set of this Strolling Surprise. It's just like six little figures. Somebody has bought that. It's the second Polly Pocket that sold. Very unusual, I think, for that one to sell before some of the other ones. You know, I put out the video last week of all the Polly Pockets, and the compacts, I think, look the best. The ones that light up, I think, look amazing. But for some reason, these individual figures have sold second. I don't understand it. I would love to be in the financial position of the person that bought this. But yeah, they ended up selling the... That means that... Have we broken even on the Polly Pockets already with two sales? We'd have like maybe 14 to go. I paid $200 for those Polly Pockets. This one sold for 80. I think the last one sold for about $100. So we're basically in the profit already. And we have a lot to go. So yeah, that Polly Pocket purchase is going to be trickling money into my bank account for the next, for like, I don't know, 6 weeks. Now, the next thing is something that I thought was going to sell quick, which is why I bought it. It was 3 into $49.95. I think I originally put it on Facebook Marketplace just by itself, thinking it would go well there before chucking it on eBay. It is a Star Wars BB-8 Boppet. Now, I've talked about Boppets before. They seemingly do very, very well. I haven't made it a goal, but I've been picking up Boppets when I find them and I haven't seen the particular version before. You know, I'm wanting to buy unique and rare items. If I find a Boppet in the wild and it's your standard Boppet and I know I can sell it from like, if I know if I can buy it for like $5 and sell it for, you know, 20, I don't really want to buy it. But if I find different ones that I've never seen before, I'm going to pick them up. So this is a very small BB-8. This is like the rolling Star Wars toy from the new Star Wars films. I haven't seen the new ones. I guess it's like the updated version of R2-D2. Yeah, it's just like, it looks like a ball, like a tennis ball with like a little thing on its head, like a little mushroom on its head. That's what the Boppet is. I didn't actually play this Boppet. I don't understand how you would Boppet because it's so tiny and there doesn't seem to have the functionality to like twist it, bop it, pull it. So yeah, I don't know how it's going to work, but yeah, it's a Star Wars BB-8 Boppet. I was so close. I was so fucking close to sending a message to the buyer and just saying that like I can't send this to you because it will not stop making sounds. I could have pegged this so fucking far off my balcony. Really, honest to God. It was driving me insane, man. Like I said before, I'm tech savvy, but when I was wrapping this thing up in bubble wrap, it would not stop activating the Boppet sound effects, like just constantly going off. And I was just thinking, like, if I go to the post office or if the delivery driver gets a hold of this, they're going to be constantly hearing like Boppet over and over and over again. So all I wanted to do was turn it off, but there was no fucking off switch that I could see. I was like twisting the thing's head. I was holding down the buttons and none of it was working. At one point, I'd literally wrapped it up in the bubble wrap. I was completely defeated, yet the pressure of the bubble wrap and like the sticky tape, it activated the buttons. So I was like, I don't know. I put it down and I'm in the office and I just keep hearing this fucking thing screaming like, bop it. Fuck, man. I had to Google and look online to see how you could turn it off, and there was like a specific way you turned the figure that opened up a case that you could take the batteries out, and I was so fucking glad when I did that. But yeah, I like to find weird Boppets. They can usually sell pretty fast. They have a decent sell-through rate, but yeah, the more unusual one you find, the more valuable it's going to be. So yeah, I don't know after this off if there's any left, if there's any like really weird ones. So I might leave the older ones behind, but the brand new ones, when I say brand new, I mean old stock, like when they first come out, still brand new, they actually go for good money. So that'd be worth looking into if there's a Boppet somewhere that hasn't been opened. I would be buying that, might get a couple hundred bucks for it. Because if people are anything like me, you buy games or you get given games and they just go in a bag or they go in storage and you just completely forget about them. I swear to God, I have like 15 different games in a storage bag that I just haven't played because it's so hard to get people together to play a game. And you know, when you do like get people together, it's like, who wants to play a fucking game? But yeah, we have a couple of other sales. I'm not going to go through them. Check them out on flipweekly.com. They're all in that sort of $100 range, so there's some cool items to check out. But we'll move on to secondhand opinions, and this is a segment that I've kept going for maybe like 10 weeks by now. I throw up a topic and you vote on it. You let me know what you think. I try and present my argument. It's always poorly thought out. And I try to put up something that might be a bit controversial or splits the audience. Either way, I want to create some engagement. So last week I asked you, would thrift stores go out of business without resellers? I was a bit divided on this, and it seems like you were a bit divided too. Because out of yes, they would go out of business, and no, they would continue to do well. No, they would continue to do well has won, but only with 58% of the votes. So it was very, very close. But yeah, no, they'd continue to do well has won. Realistically, like, you're probably right. Like, they're not going to disappear. Resellers leaving wouldn't be the be-all and end-all. But honestly, I have a feeling that if resellers did stop, the end could be near. Would it be near? I don't know. Could it be near? Maybe. This week's topic is, if you had no access to a smartphone, would you still be comfortable reselling? Now, let me preface this by adding some additional context, right? What I mean by this is, if you had no access to like Google Lens or eBay to check for comps, would you be confident enough to like make purchases to resell? Are you at the stage in your reselling where you don't even pull out your phone when you're like at a garage sale or a thrift store because you know the prices of your category? Or maybe you're still a bit hesitant to spend any money on items you don't know their true value or enough about it. Like, how important is a smartphone or the internet in general in reselling? I want you to let me know. So to reiterate, if you had no access to a smartphone, would you still be comfortable reselling? Now, the poll's up on flipweekly.com. You can write in. You can jump onto social media. Just send me a message. I've done 4 answers to that. It would be either I'd do better if no one had a phone, I'd still resell, but I'd be more cautious, I wouldn't resell, how does a phone help resell? So yeah, let me know your thoughts on that. For me personally, if I had no access to a smartphone, would I still be comfortable reselling? I would say yes, but I would be more cautious. There's a lot of items that I pick up now where I just know by looking at it, like, oh yeah, this is worth easily more than like the $5 price tag that it's on. I don't know the exact value. Like, I wouldn't know if it's like $100 or like $50, but I just know that it's worth more than $5. I think if I didn't have the smartphone, I wouldn't be able to consistently hit over $100. I think I'd come in short, and I know there would be a lot of times that I would be coming home and being like, how is this not worth more? You know, when you have those moments where you think, oh, this should be worth a lot of money, and you look it up and you're like, it's not. Like, what the fuck? That would happen a lot more for me. So yeah, I would still resell, but I'd be a lot more cautious. But also at the same time, I would do a lot better if no one had a phone, I think. Thank you once again for listening to the Flip Weekly podcast. I truly, truly appreciate you. You know, I read a stat the other day that said 90% of podcasts don't publish more than 3 episodes, and 90% will quit after 20 episodes. Now, to be in the top 1% of podcasts in the world, you need to publish 21 episodes. And guess what? I mean, we're at 27 episodes. I mean, it's insane. It really is insane. It's crazy that this is still going, that I've been able to find a dedicated audience. Like, thank you, thank you, thank you. You know, in everything that I do, I aim to be the absolute best. And for you to stick with me here while I try and dominate, that sounds bad, but stick with me here, try and dominate. I'll talk to you again next week. Have a great night.
Flip, 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 fl